We'll call the Senate Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order for April 19th, 2012. And on our agenda this morning, we have a very important conversation that we are going to have about wetlands mitigation and the wetlands credit banking and how that affects our roadway projects, not just on the state level, but on the county level, and the importance of this program. We will have members, I'm sure, coming in here. I know the table looks empty at this point in time, but I'm sure they also recognize the importance of this subject, and we'll be coming in shortly. But I think in the essence of time, we need to start moving forward with the presentation. And thank you very much, Julie, for putting this together and for being here today along with the other participants.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator Gimsey, for inviting us here to give this presentation and to provide information about this program, which many people are just not very familiar with, but it is really important for local roads and transportation throughout Minnesota. My name is Julie Blackburn. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. I do also have with me John Jaski, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, and Les Lem. He's our Wetland Conservation Act Administrator at Bowser. So we were asked to come here by Senator Gimsey to provide some very basic information about this program. It's a complicated program that is not very well understood, and so we're just kind of trying to share the information about the importance of this program and how this program works, particularly the funding cycle. It is one of those programs that has to be funded well in advance, and I'll explain the reasons for that. So we're going to talk about the Minnesota Local Government Roads Wetland Replacement Program. A little bit about the background of this program. Both federal and state law do require that all wetland impacts must be mitigated and replaced. So wherever there's a wetland impact, it has to be offset somewhere else. So that's the federal law. That's the state law. We have a no-net loss law in Minnesota. Well, in 1996, there were some amendments made to WACA, which provided for Bowser doing the coordination of wetland mitigation for local road projects that are for improvements for safety reasons. For instance, if you need to do a realignment because of speed was changed, because of population changes, and in order to address that safety concern, you need to do some kind of a realignment. If you're impacting that wetland, what was happening previously is every single local unit of government, road authority, had to figure out how to do this on their own. And oftentimes it was very small wetland impacts, and it's a really extensive process to go through mitigation. You've got to develop a wetland mitigation plan. It's got to go through a local approval process. It can take a very long time. And because of how cumbersome that process was, the local units of government and local transportation authorities basically said, we need this to be coordinated. We need it to be coordinated in a central agency so that we can achieve some efficiencies and some streamlining when we're doing these road projects that are required by law in order to meet safety reasons. So in 1996, this program was created, and again, it provides that replacement for local road safety improvement projects. The program benefits are it's a lot more cost-effective. What was happening before, again, was each transportation authority had to go through their own wetland mitigation program. They had to develop their own bank or their mitigation plan, go through the local approval process, and each one of those sites then needed to be developed individually, so they were much more expensive. So because we are now streamlining it into one agency, we are the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We're wetland experts. This is what we do. We build wetlands. So we achieve some cost effectiveness by having it centralized. It's much more efficient. It simplifies the regulatory process for those local units of government. All they have to do now, instead of going through figuring out a mitigation plan that gets approved through a local process, which may be lengthy, they basically fill out a form and they send it to us. We review that form, make sure it complies with all the requirements of the program, and then we give them the credits that are needed for their wetland mitigation. So it's much more cost-effective, much more efficient, much more streamlined on regulatory requirements at the local level. And it also results in much better wetland replacement. So instead of these, you know, a third of an acre or an acre or, you know, little bits here and there, Bowser is able to go out and build large wetland complexes. So there's a much more beneficial environmental benefit for this type of a program. And it also, when we do all of our wetland mitigation siting, we use an interagency process, and we can look at where's the best place to put those wetlands so that we can meet overall interagency goals for the state as well. At a glance, it's pretty simple. There's three basic steps to it. We get the funding, we get the appropriations through bonding. We go out and we build wetlands. Sometimes, in fact, by the bill that is the Senate file, the bonding bill 2577, actually allows us also to buy credits. But most of the time, we are building them. So we build those projects, and then the road replacements can go forward. Before we go into a little bit more of the specifics about this program, just some very basic information that's really important to why we're looking for more investment into this program right now. There is a new federal mitigation rule. This changes the federal requirements. What it requires is that we need to focus on that watershed-based replacement, and I'll get to that. I'll show you what that means in a little bit. There's also higher standards for wetland replacement. Wetlands have to meet both hydrologic and vegetative restoration goals. So you don't just go build a wetland and go, okay, that's done. You know, we impacted 5 acres. We replaced it with the 10 acres. There's all kinds of requirements for hydrology and vegetation. Any of the flexibility of credit balances that used to be allowed through the federal rule are now going to be gone. The rule states that we have to have these credits done in advance of any impact, and that we need to demonstrate that we have a good enough surplus of credits that we aren't going to go in the hole on our credits that are available to local road authorities. Otherwise, the federal government will stop that project from going through. So it's important to know that.
Ms. Blackburn, I think that's a very important point to really drive home, is that this change in the federal law is, if we look 5 years or 6 years into the future, could be very detrimental to our the possibility of even doing some of our road projects at this point in time. I wanted to stop you here because what I heard you say is what causes me a lot of heartburn, if you will, as we look to the future for transportation. And maybe you want to just back up just a little bit and go through that one more time.
Okay.
Repeat it for us, please. And now, I would like to say Senator Ingebrigtsen, the chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, has joined us, and I appreciate you being here, Bill. We're going to need to work together like you do between government agencies, but also as committees, in order to accomplish some of the goals, I believe, with this program. So thank you for being here, Senator.
Thank you for having me.
Ms. Blackburn.
Chair Gimsey, I think that's a really good point. And actually, if in your packet you have a 11x17 folded document. This was our pamphlet on this program. And I'll get to this in a little bit more detail later. This was kind of just setting it up that we do need to have these credits in our wetland bank prior to the impacts being done. We need to show substantial amount of surplus of those credits in order for the Corps of Engineers basically to be comfortable with our program so that we don't have to make sure that they are prove that we have them ahead of time. And if we don't have them ahead of time, they will not approve some of those projects. They will not allow this program to continue. It's a requirement right now. They've just kind of maybe not paid as much attention to our deficit balance that we have right now. On this folder, this flyer that you see on the inside right-hand side, you'll see that we have deficits in different areas of the state, and I'll explain this in more detail later. But what it means is that if we can't, for instance, in the watershed area in the metro, if we don't have credits available in advance that are made available to those road authorities, they either have to purchase them on their own, go build their own banks, or go through some other process. So it's not just filling out the form and requesting it from Bowser anymore and being able to just proceed with that road project. It's going to stop the road project. It's going to require them to go through a lengthy process themselves where they have to figure out their own mitigation. So it's a significant impact. And again, I'll go through that in a little bit more detail later. So understand, just setting up a little bit of the issue here, that new federal mitigation rule is a big, big issue for us. And I also want you to understand then that bank service areas, when we're talking about bank service areas, this is part of the new federal law rule. All of these different lines and colors that you see, these are different watersheds. And every wetland type in those watersheds, they determine to be unique of themselves. And so you can't replace wetlands in one watershed with wetlands in another watershed. There's very limited flexibility. So we have to make sure we have a credit surplus in every watershed. Every now and then you can go across a boundary, but it's not the preferred method, and the Corps of Engineers may not approve that going through. So we have to make sure that we have surpluses in each one of those watershed areas. Another thing that's important to know in this program is, what is a credit? We talk about acres of impact and replacing them with credits. A wetland credit is basically an acre equivalent of a restored wetland function. Okay, so if you look at an acre that is not in a wetland, and we're going to do a wetland restoration there, if it was 100% perfect restoration, you would get an acre worth of credit. If you were, if you looked at that acre and it was already maybe partially drained, and so it had some water there, and that you did a full restoration, you would only get credit for that additional restoration of the wetland. Additionally, if you don't achieve the complete restoration, you only get partial credit. So maybe you were really trying to get a full ecological vegetative restoration, but for some reason reed canary grass came in or some other type of issue happened and you didn't achieve vegetative restoration, you're only going to get partial credit. So that acre doesn't always equal an acre of credit. There's variances to that. But you know, we do the best we can to make sure that every acre that we're achieving on a restoration, we get 100% credit on, but there are variances to that. So again, we build the wetlands, we get credits for them, and then those are used, once the credits are established, they go into a wetland bank, and those can be used to do those road offsets. So how do we establish credits? This is where it's really important to look at 5, 7, even 10 years out what's happening with our credit situation. It takes several, multiple, sometimes maybe even a decade to establish these wetlands. From the time we get the funding, it takes us a couple years to make sure that we go out and do the sites, we get an RFP, we want to make sure that they're situated in those bank service areas. And then we go out and we build the wetlands, and then through a long-term process, those credits are established. This is an example from 2006 to 2011, how long it takes for the vegetation and the hydrology to take place. The Corps will not approve the credits until that restoration is restored to their ecological standards. So here's a kind of an example of a timeline. We get the funding, we get the appropriation, we work through our board and our committees and an interagency team to develop an RFP to target where we're going to build these wetlands. And then we've got to work with the landowners, get an easement, go out for, you know, actual construction, site design, engineering. We might put in weirs, we might break tiles in order to put that wetland in place. So we do the actual construction then. Once the construction is done and we go out and an interagency team reviews it, some of the credits, you know, of the estimated credits that we're overall going to get, some of the credits are made available to us. And then over a series of years, the remaining credits come through. So what happens is every year we go out, until we have 100% of the credits, we have to go out on an annual basis and do an inspection of each wetland. We look at how much more vegetation's been restored, if the site has continued to be maintained for hydrology, and after that annual monitoring report is done, we meet with an interagency team and say, okay, we've achieved this much more restoration, it should equal X amount more credits. Hopefully the Corps of Engineers and the interagency team approves that. And so incrementally, as we achieve that ecological restoration on an annual basis, credits are given to us from that bank site. So it may, I mean, if it's a perfect site that we've done a really good job looking at, you know, how do we achieve ecological restoration for both hydrology and vegetation, it may only take 3 to 4 years. Typically, we're going to run into a problem. We might have reed canary grass. Something might happen with the hydrology. It's going to take us a few years. This is ecology. I mean, things happened out there in the ground. So it takes a number of years for us to actually get all of those credits, and it's an incremental deposit of credits into the bank. Once we have 100% of those credits, we go into a long-term monitoring. We monitor at least once every 5 years to make sure there's no infringement on that easement. There's no roads. There's no anything going in there. So we make sure that the state's investment remains sound.
Ms. Blackburn, I'd like to go back just one step to where you talk about the influences that come into play. Would a weather situation like we had last year, where we had a fall that was extremely wet, and an extremely wet winter, an extremely wet spring, and come July the rain shut off, and we had a very dry fall and winter again now. Does that come into play? Are those factors that come into play when we're looking at how long it takes to realize these credits?
Yes. Chair Gimsey, you're absolutely correct. When you're restoring vegetation, hydrology, the hydraulic regimen, you know, when does the rain come, what happens with the weather, has everything to do with how well those plants take. I mean, I'm sure everybody's got some kind of gardener, you know, is familiar with that. You know, even if we're out trying to sow our grass in our yard right now and patch it up from our dry spell last year, you have to have the right conditions. Otherwise, those seeds aren't going to take. You might have a bad weather year, and you might not get the credits deposited that you thought. It's going to get delayed. You're going to get on there. We have restoration ecologists. We have plant ecologists, hydrologists, you know, that go out there and really look at that site. Is there anything we can do on that site? We're out there all the time making sure that we are getting that vegetation established and the hydrology established. When we're doing the monitoring on this, we have a monitoring crew that goes out there. They go out with these really great, they're called tremble units, and they're basically GPS units, and they mark where the vegetation boundaries are. They identify any vegetation that needs to be taken care of, for instance, noxious weeds. So if there is a farm field next door or some public lands next door, anything next door that maybe has a weed problem, we always have to fight that. And then we also have to monitor the hydrology. We set up probes and hydrologic monitoring of groundwater, because when you're restoring for hydrology, the Corps of Engineers requires that under the driest 2 weeks of any season, you maintain that hydraulic regimen for that wetland type. So it's very intensive. And so everything's got to be perfect, and that's why it takes multiple years for all of those factors to really line up to have a perfect restoration.
And this also plays into the reasoning, I suppose, behind having excess credits or surplus of credits when you're moving through this process or as you're moving through it.
Yeah, Chair Gimsey, you're absolutely correct. It's the what if. You know, what if not all those bank sites are going to get established on time? You need a reasonable surplus in order to give some assurance to the Corps of Engineers that you can meet the mitigation goals.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn.
So, and I think we just kind of went through this, you know, credit establishment, you know, it is like finding a needle in a haystack. You need to find the right site. We want to find sites that have good vegetation around it, because if it's infested vegetation around it, that's what we're going to be battling with. And that's just too much. So we need to find, we're trying to find, you know, a good price for the easement that we're purchasing, willing landowner. We always have to, you know, deal with some kind of drainage issues. In most situations, we're working with a drainage authority. There's obviously lots of other land use, particularly in agricultural areas right now. But our goal is to have a really high quality restoration so we can achieve the maximum credits from that are available on that site. So it's just all got to work perfectly. So as far as local government use of this program, how does it impact our local governments? What does it do for them? Well, there are two ways that you go through offsetting, and one of them is you develop your own mitigation. You have to go through that local unit authority. You have to develop a wetland mitigation plan. It's got to be approved locally, and that's kind of a long process. But local road authorities, when they're using this, again, they just simply fill out a form, a request. They send it to Bowser. We make sure that it qualifies for use under this program, and then we approve it, and we give them credits. So it really simplifies the program for the local road authorities. As far as who uses the program most, about 90% of the program use is by counties. We do have townships and cities that use it as well. And I know we have some counties and townships here that have a extraordinary benefit from this program and may be able to attest to that. I think in the past you've gotten some letters from the Interagency County Group and Association of Minnesota Counties about that. So it's a very simplified program for them to use rather than mitigating on their own.
And we're hearing from the counties and townships, certainly in some cities, as we're moving through the bonding process, because it's in our general obligation bonding bill that the dollars for this program are they're in that portion under Bowser. I believe on the Senate side it's about $6 million. On the House side, about two. We've requested 13.1. As we go through the process, it's one of the purposes for this hearing, and so people understand, is the importance and the impact that this will have into the future and on local units of government if we don't adequately fund it. So I'll just take this opportunity to make a pitch, if you will, for the request that we've made in the capital bonding bill.
As far as our actual wetland credits used by those local road authorities, the annual average over time is about 177 acres. You can see that there's some change. I mean, it really dropped off in 2007, and obviously that's when the economy really started taking a nosedive. And we would expect that as the economy continues to pick up and as we're, you know, there's also dollars in the bonding bill and for local roads. And so if we're going to appropriate for local roads, we need to make sure that there's these wetland credits available to them. Over the last 10 years, the average has actually been closer to 220 acres per year. Credits per year, excuse me. So, again, this is inside that flyer that you have. This is the 2011 program credit balance. Again, that bank service area, that dark line of the watersheds in the state, those are core established bank service areas. That's in the federal rule. Every wetland that's impacted needs to be replaced within that bank service area. So we need to make sure that there is that blue color in each of those bank service areas. Otherwise, we run into a dead end on the road projects where they either have to go through purchasing from a private bank or doing their own mitigation.
Ms. Blackburn, we have a number of questions, and I'd like to welcome the chair of the Agriculture Committee, Senator Magnus, to the table here. And Senator Magnus, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple questions. With the mitigation programs, what is a mitigation rate? Is it 1 acre per acre, or is it 2 acres per acre? Does it vary through the state and the metro areas? And
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Senator Magnus, that's a very good question. And there are varying rates. And there's a different map that's also out there that shows what that rate is for replacement. In the areas in the northeastern part of the state where they're very wetland rich, you can get the rate can be 1-to-1 replacement. There's a couple of requirements that get you to 1-to-1. It might be 1.5-to-1, but there are some bonuses that you can get through the different type of restoration you're doing. So you can get it to 1-to-1. In every other area of the state, it's essentially 2-to-1. So you impact 1 acre of wetland, you have to replace it with 2 acres of wetland restoration.
Okay. Senator Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, okay, so with the average now over this period of years here in your chart, the previous slide, 177 acres, so we're basically looking at maybe at the most 100 acres of wetlands taken out for road construction. Ms. Blackburn, would that be a fair assessment?
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Senator Magnus, those are actual credits. And we actually looked at a couple of the numbers over the last couple years from 2008 to the beginning of 2011. We received 378 applications from local units of government. 278 acres were impacted, we had to offset that with 473 credits.
Okay, well.
So again, that's the difference between an acre impact to the credit needed in order to offset that. And there's varying, I mean, there is some sliding scales. You can get, you know, bonuses for super ecological restoration, you know, some different things like that. But for the most part, you know, just as far as the majority of them, it would be a 2-to-1 ratio and everywhere besides the northeastern part of the state.
Well,
Senator Magnus.
And Mr. Chairman, you know, and I see in the slide we're on now at, you know, your bank areas here, you know, very across the state. And I guess my concern, Mr. Chairman, and members, as the chairman of the Ag Committee, is a loss of productive farmland when we really at a time that looking into the future, we're really going to need to step up production when we see demand all around the world for agricultural products, and especially out of the U.S. because we have such a great resource of agricultural production here. And my concern, Mr. Chair, and others here, is that if you're looking at replacing wetlands 2-to-1 with this, my concern, frankly, is the loss of farmable land that you know, we see extending in the future. And I know in MnDOT's case, I think they've shifted more to a maintenance and preservation program and not building a lot of new roads. And so, you know, I'm sitting here with a conflict in my mind where we're looking at not a lot of new roads. And I know the local roads are in here, too, and I know we're doing some expansion. But, you know, looking at a future of greatly increasing our food needs worldwide, and then, looking at the future here of not building a lot of additional new roads. So that's just a statement I wanted to make, Mr. Chairman, not really a question for Ms. Blackburn or anyone, but it is a concern I have.
Yeah.
And so we'll see happens here down the road.
And Senator Magnus, that's the balance that we have to achieve, and I'm grateful that you are here to express that. Senator Ingebrigtsen is here. Some of the barriers dividing lines, probably not barriers so much, will have to be broken down over time in order to be able to accomplish this. But even some of the road maintenance issues that we have out there, when it comes to safety, we have to realign roadways that affect. And so, you know, we just have to begin this discussion and actually probably move rapidly forward with this discussion because of the urgency. We need to find that balance and find a way to accomplish this.
And I know, Mr. Chairman, even though they may not be constructing a lot of new roads, I know when they redo roads, you know, you're widening them out in most cases, and leveling them out and making changes and affecting wetlands and affecting lands. There's no, you know, I don't mean to say that I don't recognize that, but when I look at the maps here, and you know, and I'm not certain in my mind either. I know the federal rules have changed somewhat. I don't have a handle on those, and I don't know if the federal rules are driving our decisions or if they're state, their state regulations are what they were are. But and I'm not serving on the transportation committee anymore. But you know, I just wanted to make the concerns voiced out there that you know. This 2-to-1 is a bit of a challenge for us, and stepping up to our responsibility to feed the world. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Magnus. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Magnus' point, I'm just wondering how we prioritize it. I think I heard you say earlier that you want to get that maximum credit, and I would think the maximum credit would come from, you know, maybe more prime farmland, and I'm wondering why we wouldn't want to prioritize marginal land, you know, because we use a lot of marginal land in farming right now. We either drain tile it or we try to make it more productive, and I would think that we'd want to focus on some of that marginal land first. You might not get the full credit, but then again, it might not cost you that much to fully restore that. The other benefit I see a little bit here on your on the bank service area is it looks like you've got four bank service areas that come into the metropolitan area, so that is a looks like a that helps. But that's just a question I have. What kind of discussions have we had around that,
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and senators, as far as the ag impacts and as far as where we're citing them, actually we're citing them most of the time where there is the best opportunity for restoration. What you would find that in is the marginal lands. We are typically trying to scope out where there was a drained wetland, where we can simply break some tiles, put up a couple weirs, and take that land that the farmer may already be struggling with, getting in a plow, getting in harvest, in order to restore that. So we are not looking at the most productive, highest land value. We're looking at where we can achieve the greatest restoration per acre, and that's going to be looking at restored wetlands, wetlands that were there that we're going to restore. That gives us the best opportunity. It was there before. And therefore, we know that we have better chances of success. So we aren't looking at prime ag land. Again, we're working with voluntary landowners. So we do an RFP, and we send out a broad request. There's lots of folks that are involved in this as far as private landowners that know about this program that do different types of wetland restorations already. There's lots of conservationists that are out there that are in farming. And so maybe there's an area of their farm that has always been a bit of a struggle for them. They're looking at getting some of those multiple benefits from it. How do they stay away from that, achieve some kind of an additional financial objective? But we are looking, when we're going out there, I mean, we're surveying them, we're going out with the engineering and technician teams, and we're looking at where can we achieve the greatest restoration. Typically, that's in a previously drained wetland. That's just what makes sense on the landscape.
Thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen, did you have a...
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a couple questions. Ms. Blackburn, the Army Corps gives you a two-year grace period, and you're talking in your handout here that may go away. Can you talk about that as well as when we talk about your wetland banking and requiring a replacement in the same boundary area? I'm assuming that's becoming somewhat problematic, and I think that's probably why the most reason why I'm here is because we're certainly doing a lot of restoration projects, as you know, through the area which I work in. And has there ever been an opportunity to go across those boundaries? What kind of a problem is that? Does it take federal legislation to change that? I mean, when we're talking about some of these areas are going to be more metro as it sprawls further to the west here, the metro area, north and south, I assume. That's certainly going to be a problem. Can you comment on those two things, as to how stiff the federal government is holding you to those regulations?
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, actually the two-year grace period I think is over. We have, like I said, they've been pretty gentle with us and kind of looking the other way as far as what our credit balance is. If they were really to get stiff with the current rule, it is current rule that you need to have a surplus. Obviously, these areas in red we would have a problem with. So we are, and I think one of the problems is that if they don't see that there's an investment continuing into this program, they'll probably start to be a bit more, stiff about that requirement. As far as the bank service areas, that is a requirement of the federal rule as well. Occasionally, they will approve a request to go outside of that bank service area, but these bank service areas are based on ecological setting of those wetlands and ecological type of those wetlands, and so it is the federal rule that you can't replace outside of that bank service area because you're basically replacing a different type of wetland, and so that's... It is part of the federal rule requirement. We've been able to achieve it in areas that we thought were most difficult. I mean, if you look at St. Louis County, we've got blue there. That's a wetland-rich area. We could find them there, and we've got a credit, a positive credit balance there. So I don't think it's a tremendous hardship. I mean, we need to find the right places. We need to find the right sites. We need to make sure that out of every acre, we're getting the maximum amount of credit. But this is a doable program if it was adequately funded.
Senator DeGreff, or did you have follow-up, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No, I didn't. No, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator DeGreff.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Blackburn, I have a couple of questions. Senator Magnus was talking about ag land. To be considered a wetland project, does this land have to be purchased by the state, or can the farmer own the land and receive payments from the government for it to be considered a wetland? And can it be a 10-year or a 15-year program?
Ms. Blackburn.
Mr. Chair and Senator DeGreef, Bowser acquires conservation easements on top of that land. So the landowner still has it, still has rights to use that. They don't have the rights to develop it. There are restrictions placed on that. It needs to remain a wetland in perpetuity. So it is an in perpetuity easement because the law says, we have to achieve no net loss. And in order for us to have assurances on that no net loss, the state acquires those easements and makes sure that they maintain as those wetlands.
Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Blackburn, my second question is, there are some areas of the state, for instance, when I look at your map that's up here, you look at a lot of red around the West Metro area, but then you look at Carver County and Scott County where the river, it's a river bottom there, and it's rich in wetland. It's a beautiful area. Does it make sense that we need more in those areas that are so rich in wetlands right now that if a road goes through that area, does it really make sense that we need more when it's rich in wetlands already in those areas?
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Senator Creef, it is a requirement of the law that every wetland that's mitigated must be, or every wetland that's impacted must be mitigated. There are, based on, in the Northeast, there are some opportunities for if there are existing wetlands that are of very high ecological value that you can get preservation credits, but that's currently only available in the Northeast. We do have a law in the state, and it is a federal rule as well. We are going to achieve no net loss, and so every time there is an impact, it needs to be mitigated. And I completely understand your question, where there's a lot of wetlands, how do we need, why do we need to do this? But that is our requirement by the law.
Senator DeGreff, follow-up?
Yes, a follow-up to that, too. Some of these areas, like I said, that are rich in wetlands, do we get any credit for the folks in those counties and then those areas that were conservationists in years past before this law was created that turned their land into wetland early? Do we get any credit for that, or did they say, well, that's already ours? So we don't, that doesn't matter that these people did this beforehand. Starting today, for every acre that you take, we need one or two back. Is there any credit for the fact that some of these areas were very generous in the past to contributing to the wetlands?
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cripe, again, no net loss means that we should be gaining. There is no net loss. And so when there is an acre impacted, that acre needs to be mitigated. That is the state law.
And Ms. Blackburn, that is with new wetland acres,
right,
not what has happened,
right,
in the past. You make a very good point, Senator DeGreff. Senator Howe, to that point?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator DeGreff's point, I just had a quarter section out in Stevens County where I grew up that we put into the CREP program, the CREP program. We put a little bit of it into RIM, just a few acres, but, we put some dikes up and, we've created wetlands there, and that's not part of this program at all. I'm just wondering about the coordination with CREP and, CRP obviously is not a perpetual like CREP is, but I'm just wondering what the coordination is there and why we couldn't, look at the soil and water conservation maps and look at some of this stuff and say, well, here's where our state has created this under these other programs, because that was in the Minnesota River watershed, and that's why it qualified for CREP. And then that's one part that I'd like you to respond to. And the other part is on when we create some of these wetlands, you know, we also pay, have a program where we pay for access for public uses. And so I'm just wondering what the coordination is, what we pay for cost per acre for a the creation of a wetland for that easement to a landowner, and what we might benefit by also pairing that with public hunting and those programs where we might be able to get a cost savings in that. So if you could respond to that, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. There's a number of different questions in there. Excuse me, Senator and Chair. As far as the wetland restoration program, you know, we have a voluntary conservation program, and there's been CREP, and there is the Reinvest in Minnesota program. That's a voluntary conservation program to restore wetlands in areas of the state where we've lost up to 90% of the pre-settlement wetlands. We are building a lot of wetlands in the state. We've been able to benefit from the federal WRP program that leverages $1.6 for every dollar investment in order to help restore, again, some of those wetlands that have been drained up to 90% of the areas in the Southwest. That is a voluntary conservation program. When we take those easements, we use an average assessed tillable township value. And so we don't do an appraisal system. We use a market system that's based on sales. We have this program, which is regulatory. The requirements is that the two shall never meet. Okay, we can't use any of the RIM, CREP, anything that was used for conservation dollars to fulfill a regulatory program. That's the rules that we have right now. As far as the wetland, the road replacement program, when we acquire those easements, that's also based on that average assessed tillable market value, unless we're going out to purchase outright credits. That goes through a different process. That's more of a bidding process. So we don't do an appraisal system, as you see, similar to other types of easement systems. It's really based on that tillable market value, and we offer a percentage of that cost. And I think you asked me one other question, which I've managed to forget. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll remind you that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the follow-up question was about the hunting, the public hunting.
Oh, yes, yes.
But it sounds like we've got competing government programs here. You know, we got conservation programs, and then we got regulatory programs. And you say the two shall never meet. Is that... I need some rationale for that.
Yeah.
You know, if it's because that's what our federal government or what our government wants, then I think we need to reexamine that, and we need to look at those policies, because there should be some synergy there, not that it's competing. And maybe we need to go down that road of looking how we make those work together in concert, not in competition. So if you'd explain that, it'd be great.
Ms. Blackburn?
Absolutely, Chair and Senators. As far as the requirements right now, that is the law, you know, that we cannot use conservation program dollars to fund the regulatory program. And I think, you know, as far as many of our conservation dollars now that are going to the Reinvest in Minnesota program, that is funded out of the legacy dollars, the Constitution dollars. And I'm not sure what type of scrutiny that might be to fulfill a regulatory requirement. That's just one of those items for discussion. I've talked with Senator Gimsey about this, and we talked a lot about this in the Capital Investment Committee. I think there's a lot of policy questions that we need to explore, and I told Senator Gimsey that we were going to, over the summer, try to have some listening stakeholder dialogue over this issue of how do we try to get more benefits from this program? And I know that Ron Harnack is sitting here, and he also works up in the Red River Valley and a lot of the flood reduction projects, and what are we doing about those? And can we get any additional credits out of those? And so there's a lot of those kind of policy issues that I still think we need to spend some time investigating. What I do know right now is that for this program, we have a problem. You know, we have a problem in that we have a deficit of credits. And we have projects, and again, just a reminder, this program is only about the state requirements to do safety improvements on roads. It is not about new roads. This is about state requirements to improve safety on roads. And so we have this issue right now. I agree that we need to start talking a lot more about these policy issues and how do we get the biggest bang for the buck. As far as allowing for public access, we do have, we have five of our wetland bank sites totaling 3,200 acres about that that are actually have been turned over to the DNR in our wildlife management areas, and so they're open to hunting. They generated 2,200 credits, Polk, Chisago, Aitken, Houston, and Scott counties. And so we have been doing that. We need to do more of it. Completely understand the need to get a lot of benefits from each one of these projects. Absolutely.
So just a point of clarification. So once you create the wetlands, you've got they're 100% restored and the credits are used up, if you will, then you are teaming with, say, the DNR to turn that into an area that becomes accessible then for hunting and other recreation.
That's correct, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. Okay, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have a question. I'm just very, very glad to hear that comment that they are, and I know they are, working together with the other entities here to make this happen. So that's important because there are an awful lot of opportunities, I think, still out there to capture. So thanks.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Dibble?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I think Senator Howell stole some of my thunder a little bit. I was wondering if this conversation is happening on an interagency basis in a really intentional fashion, maybe at the EQB or some other forum like that. The fact is that we talk about these programs fairly discreetly. You're talking about them fairly expansively, Mr. Harnack's here, et cetera, and that's great. The fact is that we pay if we don't protect or restore our wetlands. I can recall $60 million in a bonding bill to do flood mitigation up in the Red River Valley, and another tens of millions of dollars still needed to address the flooding up in the Red River Valley. Dennis Anderson is railing against everyone because of the loss of wetlands and the corresponding loss of wildlife and waterfowl. There are health impacts, water quality impacts, et cetera, et cetera. Is this conversation happening at the more macro level so that we understand the externalized costs for failure to address our wetland loss issues and our failure to replace? So we can understand certainly the dollars we expend in the transportation budget. That's really, really easy to understand. It's harder to understand more socialized, externalized costs that we all kind of bear more broadly. We can understand the bonding bill very easily. We can understand the loss of property that result from all the flooding, from all the drainage, and the fact that the water has nowhere to go. Too bad Senator Lori's not here. We had this discussion about whether or not there are actually wetlands in Minneapolis on the way over here. But the fact is that at one point when there was a tremendous amount of housing pressure in Minneapolis after World War II, we drained the wetlands. They're kind of the forgotten little corners of Minneapolis, and they actually served as kind of dumps and things like that. And we drained them and put housing in there, and lo and behold, the water still wants to go there. And about 10 years ago, we knocked all those houses down and restored those wetlands because of all the flooding that had been occurring year after year after heavy rain events. So that was pretty expensive. And actually, the state got in on the act, FEMA, DNR, put some wetland restoration into the bank for MnDOT as a function. That's really expensive to do in a city, too. That's very expensive property. So, sorry, long-winded question. The short version is, are we computing the larger costs for failure to act?
Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I think that's a very good question as far as the overall dialogue. And certainly this is a piece of the pie, what we're talking about here. There is obviously a huge consideration about what wetlands are to Minnesota and the benefits that they have, especially for flood reduction, especially for water quality when you look at what's happening in the Minnesota River. Providing those wetlands to stabilize the water fluctuations in the river decreases sedimentation. I mean, there's so many multiple benefits. As far as the overall conversation, We can always do more, but I will tell you that the Board of Water and Soil Resources is made up of 20 people that are appointed by the governor. It includes four agency heads, representatives from cities, counties, townships, watershed districts, soil and water conservation districts, citizens. And so we have a wetlands committee, and they bring ideas to the board. We have a RIM committee, an easement committee, that brings wetland conservation ideas to the board. And that board meets 10 times a year, and we discuss these kinds of policy issues. That is really the role of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We have Commissioner Landwehr on there, Assistant Commissioner Rebecca Flood from PCA, Department of Ag, Matt Woolman sits on there, and Department of Health is on there. So there's a lot of interagency dialogue there. We do have an interagency wetlands team. There's a lot of work in the agencies that goes on there regarding wetlands. We do have the board with representatives from all the different conservation groups, local units of government, and certainly we try to bring the dialogue out as much as possible. I think the environment chairs in both the House and the Senate do a really good job of whenever we're bringing our proposals about what we're doing with wetlands to the committees, discussing what does this mean as far as flood impacts. And, you know, we get the DNR there and talking about the flood impacts and the flood programs, and what does it mean as far as water quality, and the MPCA is there and talking about that. So I think there is a lot of dialogue about it as far as, you know, maybe we should have some kind of a wetland conference with folks that are at the highest levels of decision making to learn about all these different pieces and considerations that need to go into an overall comprehensive view of the state of wetlands, and really what does the policy goals of the Senate and the legislative body wish to attain.
Senator Hall, is your comment to that point?
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad to hear that that's the thought, and I really sincerely appreciate Senator Dibble's comment. Because I think when we look at a parcel of land, you know, if it's a quarter section of land, and let's say we're talking about 160 acres, you might have, you know, three or four different programs that work in that parcel. And you could maximize the benefit for the regulatory part of it with the soil land or the wetlands restoration project might be, you know, 30 or 40 acres in there. And then you might have X amount for reinvest in Minnesota and the rest into the Conservation Reserve easement program. So, the concern is, I guess, is when a local farmer wants to come in and sign up to their local soil and water conservation, they go in, they might be just looking at that one piece and not the broader, and not understanding that, well, there could be a greater benefit here for the state and for, you know, for our tax dollars too.
Excellent point, Senator Howe. Ms. Blackburn?
Mr. Chair and Senator Howe, I think that's one of the things that the Executive Director, John Jaski, feels strongest about, is that when a landowner walks into a conservation district, watershed district, SWCD, county, whoever it is, that they get a menu that says these are all of the options available. And they might just want, you know, one specific, you know, an appetizer on the menu. They might want, you know, the full course. We want to go all the way into the wetland restoration program, and maybe they just want to do a practice. But we should make sure that there is a full suite of opportunities made available to them. I can tell you that when we do our RIM sign-up and we get all of our lists of everybody that's interested in this program, some of them might not fit the RIM program. We sit down and say, well, maybe you're going to be a good candidate for the wetland banking program. And so we do try at Bowser to make sure that if you've applied for something through the SWCD or watershed district process and it comes to us, we try to match you up to a good program. And so we will sometimes swap applicants from this type of a list over to this type of a list in order to make sure that they get whatever opportunities they want, so we can get, again, the biggest bang for the buck for each of those conservation dollars.
Thank you, Ms. Blackburn. We're going to proceed here. I know at 10 o'clock some other meetings are going to begin to start, and we might lose some of the participants here, but just be assured that I'll be continuing to work with Senator Magnus, Senator Ingebrigtsen, Senator Dibble, and others to continue this conversation and probably bring it to the next level beyond this committee. But we do need to move forward. So
yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, and what do you know? The next slide says conclusions. So we're at the end. I know you have time constraints. So Again, one of the main points is that establishing these wetland replacements is a long-term endeavor. As you've seen, it may take anywhere from 7 to 10 years to get all of those credits deposited and made available to those local units of government. We are in a deficit situation right now in many parts of the state, so we're going to run into some problems pretty soon. When we do have that shortage of credits, projects are either going to be delayed, stopped, or going to cost a lot more, because that local unit of government is going to have to figure out what they need to do to offset their wetland impacts. We do need that substantial investment right now so that we can get into program compliance. Once we get a good surplus, I think we're gonna feel a lot safer about continuing down the path that Corps of Engineers is allowing us to right now. And again, the last thing, and I think this is what I am hearing from the senators here, is that we're going to continue to explore our options. I've already committed to Mr. Harnack that we're going to go up there and have some dialogue with the Red River Valley and the flood projects. We're going to talk with other interests, probably talk with DNR again. We want to make sure that when we're getting these restorations, we're getting as many multiple benefits and addressing as many of the state's issues as we can with each one of those dollars. And with that, I would take any additional questions you might have.
We've had a good question and answer session here also, Ms. Blackburn, and thank you very much for your input. I'd like to invite Mr. Gary Danielson, the Candioi County engineer, to give us an engage with us in a discussion of what the impacts would be to a county like Candioi if they were to have to create or mitigate these wetlands themselves.
Thank
Welcome
you,
to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I guess that one of the advantages of being in the business a while and I did know what life was like before the replacement program was in place, and in those back to before 96 and 97 where the counties were under the regulations, but we're really on their own as far as trying to provide replacement wetlands, and it was always a scramble in doing that. We had dealing with individual landowners and getting the sites evaluated, and generally that was simply a DNR call in those days, so it was much simpler, but you end up with a lot of different scattered sites. They might be a half acre here or 5 acres there or what have you. It was a difficult enough a problem to find those sites to keep our improvement program going, and generally an improvement program is widening a road through an existing wetland and getting the shoulders wide enough and the slopes flat enough to safely carry traffic. We finally got to the point where we actually bought a farm south of Spicer, and had a number of opportunities for wetland replacement. We went through the process of restoring all the wetlands in that farm, and at the point in time we figured we would sell it. Well, it turned out we ended up trading it for land that we exchanged near the Prairie Woods Environmental Learning Center. So it wasn't a road and bridge plan, but it worked out real well for the county. We next worked with the state agencies and I think even Bowser at that time to buy a number of credits and bank a large number of credits within the Grass Lake Restoration Project. And so we thought we might be set for life on that. But since that time, rules have changed, and those acres are still out there under county easement. But because of the change in rules of various agencies, they've been lost to us as a bank. So we've been very, very dependent on working with Bowser and working with the replacement program. In the history of our county, we've actually had 27 different projects that we have utilized the program on. Most of those are ours as a county. 22 of them are our county. The other five are our township and cities that have used it where they're doing roadway maintenance and roadway improvement. We've impacted a total of 33.3 acres, which is, you know, that counts up after a while. It's a lot of wetland, which has been mitigated primarily on a 2-to-1 basis, and it's just been excellent for us because the fact is just so streamlined and almost works to the extent you can hardly believe how simple it is. And we'd really love to see that in other areas as far as streamlining, and we've been pushing for that. But it's been a great program. It's kept our projects on track. We've got projects that are coming up for this year that we'll be applying for the use of credits to the tune of probably 5-6 acres. So it's a significant need. The things that we did find when we were out there looking for our own credits was competition from other agencies. Who gets to the farmer first? It was an interesting situation, and it's been greatly appreciated by the counties and certainly appreciated by myself to have Bowser out there to really help in this process, putting wetlands in strategic areas and then being able to monitor the larger acquisition of wetlands versus a helter-skelter approach that we were really forced to use before the program was available.
Just a quick question, Mr. Danielson. What would you estimate, if you were to make an estimate to the hypothetical situation that we don't have this program, what would it cost or what would be the time requirement on the part of the County Highway Department to be able to fulfill the requirements, say, to even mitigate just the 5 acres? Do you understand where I'm going with that as far as...
Yes, I believe I do, Senator. And we do have cases where we don't qualify for the program. That is, if we are changing alignments substantially and impact wetlands. And because of the complicated nature of finding and trying to restore your own, we've gone out and purchased credits in private banks, and of course that can vary a lot. But what we, you know, $10,000 to $14,000 to $20,000 is not been uncommon from what we have seen. And as land prices get higher and higher, it becomes more and more of a challenge to be able to do that. But in essence, knowing the complications of establishing your own bank, when we've really gotten up against it and can't use the Bowser system, we've had to go out and purchase.
And I can only assume that if this program was to go away, if you will, or not be funded, and we weren't able to use it, that the scarce nature of the wetlands themselves would drive up the cost to the counties and the townships and the cities. Because the value of them, of course, those that are established that you'd be able to go out and purchase would certainly go up just because of the scarcity.
I think that supposition is probably accurate, but I think from the standpoint of counties and local governments such as the townships when they get involved or the cities, the key thing is having investing in really quality wetlands and getting them in the right locations, as Ms. Blackburn was talking about, looking at strategic areas and trying to work with landowners. We happen to be not in a bright red county, but we're in a pretty red county. And having gone through an effort near north of Wilmer, near Eagle Lake, on a project that you're quite familiar with, and trying to actually go within the watershed and find areas to restore, just because we were concerned about the water quality within that watershed, it's very, very tough to find willing landowners, especially if you're not considered to be in the business, such as a county. So it's a very important program. It's been greatly beneficial, and I'd certainly urge that it continue to be funded in a robust and manner that we can keep going with our projects.
Thank you, Mr. Danielson, Gary, for being here today. And I just want to say that John Jasky, the executive director for Bowser, is here also. Appreciate you all coming in. We will have a continued and further discussion on this. It's an important topic. And again, I appreciate you being here and for your presentation. It's just the start. So thank you. With that, the meeting is adjourned.